Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us, and Happy New Year. Today, our special guest is Craig Hill. We do this annually, at least once. Craig's a hard money loan expert, been with the Norris Group since our beginning in 1996.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Almost 18 years. Craig, welcome to our show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, I guess the first thing is that when people listen to the radio and they hear rates and they call our company and get what we would term hard money rates, they're in for a little bit of a sticker shock. So what is the basic difference between, you know, conventional lenders and what we do? Not just in terms, but also in the types of loans that they
sure.
will do and what we would do.
Exactly. Most of the people that say call and have sticker shock, if you will, those are, say, people that are generally homeowners or they're looking to be homeowners. So they're maybe calling us. Maybe they have bad credit, so they can't get a loan at their bank or with a traditional mortgage company. So they're calling us. Maybe they have 30% to put down on a house, so they're calling us trying to get a house that they can live in. And because that's really not what we do, there is a sense of sticker shock there because the rates are much higher than what they're hearing, say, advertised on the radio or what have you. So one of the major differences of what we don't deal with homeowners that are going to be buying a house to live in.
Correct.
We deal with primarily investors, and these investors, they're going to buy houses, they're going to fix them up, they're going to resell them. In a lot of cases, with the way the market's been the last 4 years, our clients are going to buy houses, fix them up, and maybe rent them out and hold them either till property values go up or hold them for the long term. And another difference that maybe even differentiates us between other what you'd consider hard money companies, and you've heard me say this many times, we tend to do loans, not situations.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our clients are repetitive. They're full-time real estate investors. And we still get a lot of calls. We get a lot of the homeowner, owner-occupant calls, like we discussed earlier. But we also get a lot of calls, or at least a fair amount, from people that are they're calling because they have a one-time situation that they're trying to fix. Like, it usually starts out like, I have this situation I'd like, you know, and usually when I hear those terms, I know we can't help them because maybe they're behind on a mortgage or taxes or they have a one-time situation they're trying to fix. And for us, that's never been part of our business model. We prefer to deal with professionals who are doing this full-time.
And I guess one of the problems with a situation is that whenever liquidity happens, that situation gets taken care of, but then all of the cushion in their life just disappeared with the additional payment of a hard money loan.
Exactly. There isn't a solution. It's more of a Band-Aid. In other words, you're helping in the immediate future, but you probably haven't done much to help their overall situation. You're handling their crisis, but you're probably not helping them really moving forward. So we've always, well, since the inception, as you mentioned, as you know, we've really never done any situations.
Well, you know what's interesting, that when you brought that up, it just brought to mind that I overhear a lot of the conversations because my office is, you know, close to yours. And there's a lot of times that you're in the protection business. You're literally protecting somebody from themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I do. A lot of times, you know, they're looking for an answer, and sometimes you're able to rationalize with them, well, what are your other scenarios here? Or what else can you do? You're just, because really, once again, to do some kind of loan to help somebody, and you can look into the, say, the near future and realize, you know, 3 months from now, they're either going to be in the same shape or worse off. A lot of times, you do try to at least, you know, get them to realize that fact that, you know, that this isn't going to work for you. So maybe you need to try to go down a different path.
Well, also with the advent of the flip, you know, buy and flip shows on TV, there's been a new genre of people that, you know, call us for loans and, you know, they found a deal in San Bernardino and then you find out they're sitting in Ohio and
right.
the deal they're told about is from an agent that perhaps is on commission. And, you know, when we look at the numbers, we really just go, we just don't see any potential. And you've even had people putting, people in those deals saying, well, this is, I think they did, they figured that this was just practice.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard all kind of, the one scenario there that I try to talk people out of, and that example is pretty good. I tell them, when you're the investor on a deal, maybe that person that's out of state trying to buy a deal, I tell them, you have to realize everybody in this deal is making money as soon as you do the transaction except for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's everybody else's motivation.
Right.
Your motivation, you're going to only get paid if the deal works out. So we, as you know, I think there's more deals that we turn down because of bad numbers than we do, and it's probably quite a large portfolio percentage, especially when you're dealing with new people. You're just really trying to, in a sense, protect them from themselves, because We try to act, even though, I mean, you know, we're involved in the transaction, we certainly try to look at it from a point of view as the person buying the property. And if it doesn't make sense for them to do it, even though it may make sense for us to do a loan, and but what I mean by that, they say, well, we'll put more money down or we'll do this. And we always try to talk them out of it, because you just can't make those situations work. In other words, the numbers are the numbers. What the business that we're in, it's pretty simple math, really.
Mm-hmm.
And if the numbers don't work, really no amount of wanting it to work is going to make it happen if the numbers are no good.
I think there's also a misconception about the ease of finding conventional investor funds, where somebody that's not in the trenches on a daily basis comes into the fray. Here's our terms and our interest rates of 12%, and they've just heard a radio ad saying something like 4. So they go on and embark on this adventure of finding, you know, non-owner occupied funds, only to maybe come back around and go, there aren't any.
Yeah, exactly. Once again, that's why, I mean, what's nice for us is so much of our business is repetitive. So, you know, they've already been through that as, say, first-timers or new people looking. And it's generally those people that think it exists, that's just because they haven't really looked or had a deal before. And there is kind of a... you hear this all the time. I mean, you've probably heard this, and maybe there's some element of truth in it, but a lot of people are taught, well, if you find the deal, money will come.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily true, especially since what happened in the 07, 08, 09 time period there. There's very few people, if you don't have money of your own to put with an investor's money, or in our case, a company's money, you're going to have a real hard time finding a deal where you can get it funded without any money.
Well, especially in the time frame that's necessary.
Right.
So when somebody says, okay, money will come, tentative money will come and have their toe in the water, and it just happened to somebody that we know that you don't even know of the transaction, but somebody said they were going to fund it, a private person directly, and then they backed out.
Right.
And so that's really not the kind of source that you need when you're trying to build a business model.
Yeah, no, you need a reliable source. And as you well know, we get a lot of calls from people that say whatever they had working fell out. Now we got to close it in the next 2 days.
Right. Usually they don't offer that up. You're the one that asks that.
Right.
They'll come across and say, okay, this is Tuesday. Can we close this Friday? Only to find out that, yeah, we've been promised this for 3 weeks and now it's not going to happen.
Exactly. And that is a very, very common situation that we run into.
What's some of the misconceptions about qualifying for hard money from the borrower side?
I think probably the credit versus available cash scenario. In the traditional world, you know, if you have an 800 credit score, and you have, say, even a limited amount of liquid funds, you can probably, if you don't have a lot of loans, you can maybe qualify for something.
Mm-hmm.
In the hard money world, we're kind of the reverse of that. We're only going to look at credit in the sense of if somebody has like an active bankruptcy or maybe judgments, anything that might cloud title if they buy something, then that would prevent us from doing a transaction. But we're gonna do a loan regardless of their credit if it's in the past. But we're gonna look at how much liquid cash they have. So the example that I just kind of the quick example I use people: somebody with $200,000 in the bank and a 580 credit score would most likely qualify with us, whereas somebody with an 800 grand or a 800 credit score and say 10 grand in the bank, that's not somebody we can work with, because when you're dealing in this business, there's always going to be a property, a circumstance that comes up when you're fixing a house where you're going to have some unexpected expenses. And you know, you can't be in a situation where you're one $10,000 problem away from that 800 credit score turning into 580.
Right, and of course, private money usually doesn't affect the credit score, but it's also that new person that's stepping into the fray for the first time.
Right.
And so they're thinking, okay, well, this is going to work smoothly, and I'm going to sell it in a timely basis, and then all of a sudden payment 4, 5, and 6 comes up, and they had a repair bill they didn't anticipate, and they're... That's kind of the where you save people a lot of grief. They may be frustrated in the beginning, but then I think they come to realize they were right. You know what? I'm glad I'm not over my head, or if I'm over my head, I should have listened. But that's one of the biggest criteria surprises, I think, because people are told over and over again from people, you know, you go to a club and somebody from the hard money world gets up there and it says, okay, well, there's no cash needed or there's no credit requirements. And then all of a sudden you call us, and it's the need for money is it's probably the biggest criteria, not just money into the deal, but money in the reserves, like you mentioned, because, okay, we've done this 18 years and funded a lot of loans. Whenever we've had somebody have problems, it's usually because they're out of reserves.
Exactly. And then one follow-up point, because I thought of it earlier, how I frame that lack of cash scenario, because usually that's a difficult, you know, they don't want to hear that because they've heard something else.
Right.
I say, well, here's why I'm talking to you like this. Okay, you're talking to me as a lender. Now let's look at it in a different element. Now you're one of 10 offers going in on a house. You got 5 all cash offers that have bank statements. You have, you know, 3 other hard money letters where the guy has a couple hundred in reserves. Maybe you have one that doesn't have anything to prove, and then you got yourself. Maybe, you know, the reason I won't give them a letter, because if they can't show, you know, they're not going to show strong enough when they're making the offer. And it's really going to limit their ability to get a deal, and I think that creates a cycle of frustration. So I always talk to them in the sense, if they're really serious about doing this and moving forward and doing this, you know, even if they ramp up gradually, maybe either have to find a friend or a family member or something, but you have to solve that cash needed situation first. And then go out there and start making offers, because then you're giving yourself a much greater chance of success.
Yeah, and I think that especially when you're new, you're really amped up to do your first deal. So it's like that's a make or break. But you also get people in the loan business that are like that.
Right.
Where they don't have a lot of really good clients to choose from. So almost any request for a loan looks like a good loan. But when you have as many inquiries as we do, and really try to make loans that are only going to be successful outcomes, as in we get paid every time and get paid off, you know, we don't want it to not work for both sides. We want it to work for both sides. We don't want somebody locked in a loan where we have to chase the property ever.
Exactly. That's just, as you know, it's never been our business model. You know, that's I'm sure some lenders look at hard money and that, you know, there's nothing wrong with this business model. It's just a little different where they are making a loan, whether it be a refi or whatever the case, strictly based on the fact that, okay, we'll do this much, and we'll take the property back if we have to, you know. And
I've heard you use the sentence when you run across a type of deal that you say, instead of them finding a deal, the deal found them.
Yeah, and I think that really fits, because sometimes when I deal with people and I'll ask them, like, you know, they get a deal and I can tell it's a deal that, oh, it's maybe a real difficult property or something like that. And this goes back a little bit where a lot of the properties were REOs, where now they're definitely being bought off private parties and short sales. But they say they've found something that's been on, say, the MLS for 60 days, where every other investor in the county has had a chance to look at it and has passed on it at the value they bought it for.
Right.
So that's that typical case where, like you say, they're just so anxious to buy something that they just want to make something work.
Or they take on a problem that they feel is manageable, and then we look at their experience level. Last night when I was speaking at a club, there was a gentleman that came up to me, and he says, you know, do you guys do, you know, upper end hard money loans? I said, well, tell me the transaction. And he said, well, house is worth about $2 million, chance to buy it for 1.2. It's been in the MLS for 1.2 for a few months.
Right.
He said it needs about 200 grand worth of work. I guess the biggest problem is it's got a real serious black mold problem.
Right.
Well, and I said, and this is your first flip, you know. And so that's the kind of thing where somebody just, you can imagine somebody might be inclined to borrow 100%. Let's say you could loan them $1.4 million. There'd be somebody thinking, okay, well, I'll give that a shot.
Right.
Because it's not my money. And that's the kind of thing where that property found him.
Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%.
There are certain product types, and again, we've had a great track record for a long, long time, and a lot of that came from your experience level when you walked in the door. And I remember years ago, as I was listening to you talk, I remember thinking one day, you know, I can probably answer every question with the same answer Craig gives. He just knows why that's the answer. And I remember being surprised at a couple of times where, let's say we had a condo in a small project, like there was an 8-unit condo project, and a guy got what would seem like a legitimate good price deal. But that was something you just said, that's a product type that we really just don't want to do.
Right.
And, you know, there's a few of those, and that's one of them. Why is that one of them, by the way?
Well, that one there, it just, a lot of it has to do with possible assessments, you know, on the homeowners association. Any type of expense, you know, when you're dealing with the 100 would be spread over like 100 condos, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with you know, something as small as 8, if there were something major, then that applies, you know, it's only spread over 8 times.
And the other thing is sometimes the takeout financing world or the funding, you know, for an occupant isn't there.
Yeah, the funding absolutely for an occupant, because a lot of times in a small condo complex like that, most of the people, maybe they're built almost because the people want to rent them out, you know.
Right.
So there's going to be a large percentage of non-owner occupants in there.
Our investor profile, most of the people full-time or part-time investors?
I would say almost exclusively full-time investors, with the exception, since we've been doing the rental program, you probably have a small handful of people that have other jobs that, you know, also maybe have, you know, 5 to 15 rentals that they're either they've already purchased or they're you know, trying to accumulate.
And what percentage do you think buy in their personal name versus buy in some kind of an entity?
I would have to say, it's probably upwards of 90% that buy in an entity.
Okay.
And just a few. A lot of times when they end up buying in the name, it might be because when they wrote the offer, they happened to make a mistake.
Right, and they have to close it that way.
Yeah, and they have to close it that way, and maybe after it closes, they will, you know, transfer it into an LLC or a land trust or whatever entity they do.
What percentage of our business usually has a finder and then a money partner that's like a pair?
Yeah, I would say maybe 25% or so on both sides. I mean, there are a lot of business models set up that way where they do have, they do get deals, say, flipped to them, especially once again when you're dealing with the long-term program, because they're not as concerned about an immediate profit. So certainly somebody can buy that, flip it to them. They still get a good deal on the house, and they're also looking at the long-term upside. And there are a lot of business models out there with the buyers where they do have, you know, say, not necessarily a pool, but a group of investors or people that are willing to put in down payments and repair money for them. So I would say that's probably, you know, 25% to a third. I would still say the majority of our clients, and I think what works best for us, is really the all-inclusive one-man shop where they're probably doing the majority of it, and, you know, they're finding the deal, and they're funding it with their own money, you know, probably doing anywhere from, you know, 10 to 20 a year. That's probably our most typical type of client. And it really helps because when the market changes, as, you know, if people have even tried that are listening, about 6 months ago or longer now, I mean, it really started to change where all you heard was how difficult it was to buy properties.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a one-man shop, most of those people, or a lot of them, have been around a long time, so they're equipped to, like, adapt, if you will. So what started happening, a lot of the people that maybe were getting flip deals, those sources maybe they didn't have the contacts with the REOs or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is a lot of the apps that come in, they always say how they found the deal. So they started going from REO to private party, let's say. So in other words, they were being bought off private parties instead of REOs.
Right.
And I would say the percentage drops when it turns into that, because the skill level it's taking to buy right now is much higher than, say, it was, say, 3 years ago.
Right. When, you know, we typically have a repetitive borrower, every once in a while they come to us with a property in an area that we're not thrilled about. So
right.
we're pretty conscious about where the property is. And that even if we have pretty experienced borrower with us, there's times we call back and go, we might pass on this one.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times there are circumstances, whether it be location, and that can mean, you know, it's right next to railroad tracks. One of the, you know, things too, if it's next to commercial or things like that, what happens is when the market is even stable or, you know, going up, as really the last couple of years have been that type of market, yeah, maybe you're okay, but we always look at it as if the market turns at all, nobody's going to want to buy that house next to the, you know, liquor store, if you will.
Yeah. And I, you know, we only have a minute left in this segment. I think One of the things that people that are getting into the business are thinking is that, oh, of course I'm going to end up with the worst house in the worst area, because that would be all that would be a discounted, you know, that you could get a discount on. Where really that's not been our experience in 18 years of loan business.
I think the thing that has shocked me the most is that really is absolutely not the case. I mean, and I think it's even gotten, the longer we've done the business, I think the realization has become even more that you don't, in other words, the skill is in buying the property. And you're not buying the property per se, you're buying the situation, especially when you're buying off of private parties, you're buying the situation inside the house. And that doesn't mean that the house has to be bad, but maybe somebody went through a divorce and they have to sell the house. Somebody has a son or daughter living in it, and they're not paying rent, and they just want to be done with it.
Craig, we've run out of time. Pick that up. Let's pick that up when we do the next segment.
Okay.
All right, Craig. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.